All right, welcome back to another episode of Everyday Ecclesiology. I'm Daniel Greenhall.
And I'm his wife, Desiree Greenhall.
Yep. And our goal in the podcast is, as always, is to explore what it looks like for laymen within the local church to be faithful members of one another. This week we actually put that at the beginning. I might change wording over time. If you have suggestions on how we could change wording, feel free to shoot us an email. But I thought about that for a little while. I thought that'd be helpful.
Yeah.
Thought it was nice too, because Desiree gets to... Oh, we're off center here.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, sorry. They're not. You're going to sound like you're off in the distant land. Oh, yeah. You're going to sound like you're off in Narnia.
Speaking of which...
Yes, well, we'll get to that at the end. Don't spoil it.
Sorry.
No, you're okay. I brought it up. It was my fault. Okay, that's who we are. What are we doing? What's new with you?
We're packing up to move.
Yeah.
Lord willing.
Yep. Potentially. Well, I mean, the appraisal could come back as... problematic, but that's about the only thing.
Yeah.
So, but we're excited to move. We're trying to compete on Duolingo. Well, I'm trying to compete on Duolingo.
Yeah, you are. You're just leaving everybody in the dust. It's not even a competition anymore.
No, the people on my leaderboard, there's two people ahead of me. I'm coming for you, Helen.
I got a video of Daniel looking at his scores on Duolingo and how he's competing with these other random people in the world that are... learning whatever language.
Yep.
And apparently there's a lady, what's her name again? Helen.
Helen, at least that's what
that's like, was. Going neck and neck with Daniel this week, because every week it's a different set of people, and Daniel really wanted to beat his group of people.
Yeah.
Except Helen, who's still beating him.
Yep. I was like, I'm coming for you,
but
Helen.
I got a video of him, and he's like, Helen, I'm coming for you, Helen. And it was so funny, but he made me delete it, of course.
Yeah, I was just being silly at home.
I'll have to post it on our Instagram page.
Oh, that's right. We don't have one. Look, no one can see.
Everyone got super excited, and then you just let them all down.
Yeah, sorry. They were going to go searching. Yep, so Duolingo is fun. We're learning Spanish together with a couple of friends from church. I don't know why. Well, I know why I am, because Desiree was, and I didn't want to lose at something, so I started.
I am because I mean, I started learning Spanish in school.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind being able to know more. I also wouldn't mind being able to teach Sophia a second language when she's younger, so that it's easier for her later on.
Yep. And there are a lot of people at my work that speak Spanish especially, but another language in general. Actually, I think it's all Spanish. I think everyone there that speaks another language... No, there are some people that speak another language from Africa or something. I don't know if it's French. It's another language, so it would be helpful for them to, if I could speak their language that they're more familiar with. The problem is to be able to like share the gospel with them in another language. I have to not only be fluent in the language, but also be fluent in specific, precise theological language within that language. So that'd be a little bit difficult.
So you just got a Spanish Bible.
Yeah, which I could get there. So Duolingo. We're also learning about raising a child. I mean, we have one
Wednesday night class.
Well, I was just talking about in general.
Oh.
The troubles of life.
Yeah.
She's pretty easy so far, but she is being more rebellious, dropping her food on the floor. She, like, stares at me, grabs the food, pulls it over the side of her tray, and drops it without breaking eye contact. The whole time, I'm like, oh, she's so much like me.
And this evening, she started whacking another kid for taking her toy, so we'll have to work on that, too.
Yep. Yep, she doesn't really have anyone to play with except for in the nursery.
Right.
So, well, when you go over to do laundry at a friend's house, though, she can play with their son. All right. I had a couple of teeth. I wrote on here teeth pulled, but I didn't actually have teeth pulled. I had some teeth filled.
Dental work.
Yep. And I'm kind of amazed at modern dentistry. I mean, I'm amazed at modern science sometimes anyway, but I can go in the morning and then they can... stick me with a needle and then fill the teeth, and then I'm under like Novocaine for a little while, so everything's numb, and then by the end of the day everything came back and I could feel everything again, and the next day I wake up and everything feels normal.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought I'd have like a headache the next day or
something. Also depend on the dentist too.
It could be, but they did a fantastic job.
I picked the best dentist in the area.
And I called this, instead of what we're doing, I thought about renaming it how we're serving, but I don't want to do that, because I got to thinking about that more, and I think then it would be like an unnecessary temptation to do things just to add them to this list of, oh, this is how we're serving. Because then it feels more, it feels like more of a boast than just informing people, if I call it that. That's the long and short of it. I had a couple other ways to explain that, but that just came to me as the best way to explain it. Because I don't want it to sound like a, oh, this is how we're serving. Which, yes, we do want to live in a way that we can tell others, hey, look at our lives and see how it models Christ.
Yeah.
Yes, but I don't think that's necessary here to lay everything bare, for lack of a better term, and say, well, look at how we're serving. I don't want to do that here. I'm just going to keep it to, what are we doing? And that might overlap sometimes into, oh, hey, we got this neat opportunity to have somebody over. But I don't want it to be solely focused on.
But that's more in a way of sharing how God has worked in our lives to provide these opportunities rather than look at what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not going to call it how we're serving, although sometimes there will be examples of how God's using us to serve. Good language there, Desiree.
Thanks.
I'll let you finish your bite. Sorry, they're not supposed to know we're snacking. Desiree made some fantastic bread. Mm-hmm. It was the first time trying it.
Trophy wife.
Mm-hmm. So she sent me a picture. I was at work, and I saw this loaf of bread, and I thought she went to the store and bought a loaf of bread from the bakery. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, that's she made bread. That's the bread she made. And it was super simple. Mm-hmm. Like, your hard work was in finding the recipe and then in actually baking it.
Actually, I was just watching a YouTube video and a lady made it, and it looked really yummy. And I'm like, ooh, I want that. So I found the recipe and made it.
I think my definition of a fancy bread is when the bread comes out and there's like crispy cragglies on top and it looks like it split open. Not like that wavy flappy stuff that you get that we always had
from the store.
Yeah.
Just like but regular like, sandwich bread.
It's like a whole loaf and it's uncut and there's like the crispy cragglies on top where it's split.
Mm-hmm.
That just looks really nice to me and pleasing. All right. So what are we learning?
If you want the recipe, just email us.
Yeah.
Sorry. What were we learning?
Not about bread.
Mm-hmm.
Although also about bread.
Oh, nice.
That I didn't even think about that. I'll take that fist bump.
Yeah.
So
it looked like you wanted to go in for a second one.
I mean, okay. Thanks.
Oh, that was a nice. Oh, yeah. I wonder if they heard that.
Oh, yeah, that showed up on the waveform.
Oh, yeah.
So, speaking of bread, let's finish up Lord's Supper.
Yeah.
Now, when we had this bread, it wasn't Lord's Supper.
Correct.
And we've looked the last couple of weeks, or the last couple of times we looked at the Lord's Supper, I named the episodes Paul on the Lord's Supper, not because of Paul Schmidt, one of our friends, but the Apostle Paul. We looked at his writings in 1 Corinthians, and ultimately, God inspired those words that Paul wrote, so it's God speaking as well, but taking specifically from Paul's teaching on the Lord's Supper. We looked at a couple of passages, 1 Corinthians 10 and 1 Corinthians 11, to see what they had to say, how they pertained to the Lord's Supper, and I think we looked pretty well at what the passages are trying to communicate. So this week, I'm going to put it all together, and I'm going to read Bobby Jameson's definition of the Lord's Supper. Now, I mentioned, as a caveat first, I mentioned last week that I didn't 100% agree with the definition, but I appreciate where he's coming from, where he's going, meaning he's coming from Scripture, and he's working towards broadening our understanding to be more than just remembrance, although it is a remembrance. I've said this before, I'll say it again. When we take the Lord's Supper, we remember Christ. It's not less than that, but I think it's more than that if we take what Paul said seriously. So here's Bobby Jameson's definition. I'll go ahead and read it and then chat through it. I mean, most of it we've already looked at.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, the Lord's Supper is a church's act of communing with Christ and each other and of commemorating Christ's death by partaking of bread and wine, and a believer's act of receiving Christ's benefits and renewing his or her commitment to Christ and his people, thereby making the church one body and marking it off from the world. So it's a little bit of a chunky definition there. And if you remember back to baptism, this was kind of the same twofold setup he had there. Where Bobby Jameson pointed out both the church's, I'm going to say church's side, but there's another word that I'm looking for. Not position, but like perspective.
Yeah,
you had it. The church's perspective from the perspective of this is a church doing this, and also from the individual's perspective because the church is made up of individuals. So he says that it's the Lord's Supper is a church's act and that's important. Just as baptism is to be performed by local churches, Lord's Supper is only to be celebrated, that's the right word, only to be celebrated by a local church. Doesn't mean you can't eat bread and drink wine anywhere else, and we'll get to his use of the word wine. But it does mean that when you're intending to partake of the Lord's Supper, it needs to be as a local church. Because you can commune with Christ without being a local church, and you can commemorate Christ's death by you can commemorate Christ's death without being a local church, but it needs to be, if you're partaking of bread and wine as a commemoration of Christ's death, then it's the Lord's Supper, and it needs to be as a local church, and he'll get to why at the last part of the definition. So the Lord's Supper is a church's act of communing with Christ and each other, and of commemorating Christ's death by partaking of bread and wine. And we saw those two aspects present in the passages that we looked at. So we saw that it's a church's act of communing with Christ and each other. I don't remember where he took that part of the definition from, but it is communing with one another in remembrance of Christ. But it's of commemorating Christ's death by partaking of bread and wine. This was clearly laid out in 1 Corinthians 11. When you do this, you proclaim his death until he comes. And the doing this was the partaking of the bread, breaking the bread, taking the cup. Then it's also a believer's act, because a church is made up of believers, mm-hmm. of receiving Christ's benefits. Now, his language there doesn't mean that you get any special grace by partaking of the Lord's Supper. He's mm-hmm. not saying that by doing this, you better your standing before God.
Right.
Now, can it draw you closer to God in the same way that actually obeying through your actions draws you closer to God? Because that's what this is obeying what God said. So can God choose to draw you closer to him through obedience? Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So in the way that this is a way of obeying Christ, and in that way we are drawn closer to him, yeah, I would agree with that. And renewing his or her commitment to Christ and his people, Paul said that we proclaim his death, and that proclamation is to one another. We're renewing his or her commitment to Christ. When we take it, we remember Christ's death and resurrection, and how important it was, and how without it, we wouldn't have salvation. We wouldn't be able to be reconciled to God. We wouldn't be able to be unified with one another as a local church. And the last part he says, and thereby making the church one body and marking it off from the world. So that phrase, marking it off from the world, was present also in baptism. And he carries mm-hmm. that over here as well, because the church, when they do this, it's something that's different from what the rest mm-hmm. of the world does. None of the rest of the world partakes in the Lord's Supper, because if they do, it's not really the Lord's Supper that right. they're taking. Just in the same way that the Corinthians, when they were doing it wrong, it wasn't actually the Lord's Supper that they yep. were taking. So proper administration of the Lord's Supper and proper participation in the Lord's Supper actually marks the church off from the world. It separates them. It distinguishes them. But the phrase I skipped there is, Jameson says that the Lord's Supper thereby makes the church one body. And again, I don't think I'd be quite as firm on that this action is actually what makes the church into a unified body. But I do think there's a tight connection between the church being a body and the participation in the Lord's Supper because of 1 Corinthians 10.
Yeah.
That was what we looked at just last week. So I don't have... I'm not going to throw out his definition altogether. I just think his wording might be a little bit strong, but also the definition would be even lengthier if he'd have been even more careful with his yeah. words there. So I'm okay with using his definition, but I mean, especially I'm going to explain it to somebody. I'm not just going to typically give a quick answer, just no. this definition and move on. Cause
yeah, you don't.
I don't really do that. So that's all I really wanted to cover, but I wanted to... Well, I guess I did want to touch on a couple of quick ideas. There are questions that I had brought up earlier, and I think now if I bring them up again, I brought them up episodes ago.
Oh, okay.
Not like earlier this episode. That I'd posed, things that I'd said Lord's Supper and baptism tie into. What gathering should celebrate the Lord's Supper? Now, I had never thought about this before. Mm-hmm. Reading this book, I'd never had an issue with gatherings other than the local church celebrating the Lord's Supper. But because of the error that was going on in the city of Corinth that Paul was trying to address in writing 1 Corinthians, was specifically this section of 1 Corinthians 11. He says, now concerning the Lord's Supper. Paul wrote to say, hey, you're actually not partaking of the Lord's Supper because you're doing it wrong. And what you're doing wrong is you're not waiting for one another to be there. Mm-hmm. At the end of the chapter, he says, the way to rectify this problem is wait for one another. So you're doing it all together, not just groups here, groups there.
Okay.
So with that in mind, with 1 Corinthians 11 in mind, and especially 1 Corinthians 10, of the connection between a church being a church and participation in the Lord's Supper, what gathering should celebrate the Lord's Supper? Now, your obvious answer is?
The church.
A local church.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, whatabouts?
Whatabouts?
Then the whatabouts.
What about the people in nursery? What about the sick people?
I was thinking...
What about the shut-ins?
Those are whatabouts. That's what I'm getting at, but not quite there yet.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to start with, well, quote-unquote, easier situations. What about people at home that decide they're not going to actually go to church, but they're going to be at home and watch the service live?
Okay.
Should they take the Lord's Supper?
Should they?
Yeah. It's a good question. Well, in light of Paul saying that he needed to wait for one another to actually be there, that can be taken a couple of different ways. Because some people look at that and they say, well, they're all doing it at the same time because it's televised, mm-hmm. and they can watch on YouTube and see, well, while they eat, I'm going to eat. And we're doing it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people would say, no, they needed to all be there together. It was the doing it together, seeing one another around them, and the actual physical presence makes a difference as to whether or not it's legitimate Lord's Supper.
Okay.
I'm not going to answer that question. Okay. Sorry. I said I would answer some of these.
Yeah.
I might give opinions on them. I think it would be better. I think that's the safest answer. I think it would be better if everyone was there, actually physically present at the same time. So then what about shut-ins? That's a good question.
Yeah.
What do they do?
They're shut in.
Yeah. I don't have to answer it. I'm not going to. Because I don't have an answer yet. Like I said, this section is called What We're Learning, Not What We Know.
That is true.
Yep, I was careful in titling that.
Well, and we even said in our introduction podcast that we aren't the professionals here.
Yeah. So then what about a church that has multiple services?
Mm.
Yeah. So during their 9 o'clock service, they serve communion because it's communion Sunday. Everyone mm-hmm. takes communion. And then during their 11:30 service, everyone takes communion. And then in their evening service, for like the older people that still have an evening service, they take communion. What then?
Kind of seems like it's three churches.
Yeah, it kind of does. I would lean toward they're not actually all there at the same time. And so you might say, well, what are they supposed to do, right? Because they don't actually all fit into that building. And I mean, they already probably have a pretty big building already if they're at three services. So what are they supposed to do? They don't really have an option. They do. It's called the church split. And now everyone immediately, when they hear the split, they go, that's not good. And a lot of times the church split is not, right?
I mean,
most people that have been in church for a period of time, or even have known people and talked to people in churches for a period of time, know of a church split happening, and almost always it's because people disagreed about something, could not reconcile, and so half the church just left. And it wasn't peaceful or organized or supposed to be that way. People said, I just am not going to deal with this anymore, I'm out. Or they are in error, I'm going to leave so that I'm not joining with people who are in error. That's what we typically think of when there's a church split, because by and large, that's what a church split is. But I think there could be a time when it's actually wise for a church to say, hey, why don't we just split into multiple churches? Yeah, we still know each other. We still love each other.
Don't they call that more like a church plant, though?
Kind of, yeah. That'd be another... A church plant I typically think of as we're going to take a group of people and have them start a church here and have other, and minister to that neighborhood. Which this would end up doing that, yeah.
Right.
But what you're doing is you're saying, hey, people. We actually have three churches here already. Let's split them out into, hey, there's a neighborhood over here that a lot of people live in. So let's start another building here where they can meet and be a local mm-hmm. church independent of us. I mean, yes, they can still call us and talk to us and love us, but they're not actually part of our church. That doesn't mean the pastors don't still call each other up and have lunch and consult one another about issues and members don't still go to one another's houses of different churches, well, sure, that's fine, but maybe a split would actually be helpful for maintaining actual unity within the body. So otherwise, you can run into situations where, now some people look different ways on this, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. One service elects a deacon, but the deacons are from all three services, and so they don't even know the people in the other services that they're trying to minister to. But, I mean, that deacon only ends up ministering to people from the first service, typically.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a discussion on what roles of deacons should be. This is just a recounting of what happens. And so I think it's very difficult for a deacon to know the whole body and care for the whole body when he only knows a third of it, for instance. Right. Now, could that be necessary? Is that why there's a plurality of deacons? That can be helpful, but I think, especially in light of Lord's Supper, you might consider either building a bigger building, or maybe it would be helpful even for your church to divide into three other ones, or church plant. It is a much more okay term. But it would end up, I mean, yes, the church should be growing all the time, so it would end up being a church plant because you're planting a church here where there wasn't one before, and yes, you want it to thrive and reach out to the community, not let's make the community's lives better, reach out to the community, but a let's share the gospel with the community that doesn't know Christ.
Right.
Doesn't mean our lives can't be improved, and definitely the gospel will do that, but the focus shouldn't be let's improve quality of life for everybody. The focus should be let's share eternal life with everybody.
Right.
Okay. Was there another situation? Another what about? Did I have another what about? What about small groups taking communion?
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's just not the whole church together.
Yeah.
There's not really a reason to do it just within your small group. Like, why would you even want to?
Convenience? I don't know. I'm guessing. I know that people do it, and so that there's probably a reason that they do it. It could be logistics. I mean, if you have 400 people attending a church service,
the logistics of serve everyone, yeah. I suppose.
So I could see logistics. Or if you have,
why couldn't you just like people grab their cup when they walk in?
They could. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be deacons passing it out exact same way as you do offering.
I mean, I've passed out, and I'm not a deacon. Man, all those people that got cups from me are probably doomed.
Have you ever like missed a pew?
Yeah. Awkward. A couple of weeks ago, I didn't understand so when you're serving communion, if you're serving communion, it's more complicated than I originally thought. We basically need one of those whiteboards that football players use to draw out the play of where people are going to go. It would be helpful, and it was helpful, and we ended up doing that because I had never really served communion. I had helped once or twice, but I was starting to help a little bit more, and I didn't understand where I was supposed to go because they're like different rows, and do I walk down the pew, and we don't pass the plate anymore because of COVID, and so I walk down and hand it to each person while I'm masked because that's the procedure. It's fine. But I was like, wait, who am I supposed to get? And am I supposed to go onto that side or just stay on this side? Am I supposed to do the front or the back or just half all the way into the middle? And what if they're sitting partly on my side, but the rest of the family stretches onto the other side? Do I avoid them? And I missed one person. And so before we started walking back to the center, because all the deacons start at the front, work their way to the back, and then meet in the back. Once everyone's done, they all walk forward together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before everybody walked forward together, I walked forward, handed one to the last person that I had missed. They caught up with me and we walked forward.
Awkward. Well, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't need to be polished.
Perfect.
I mean, do we want to do our best to make it as seamless and non-distracting as possible? Yes, because I don't want to be a distraction. But at the same time, it's not any less valid or any less helpful if it's not polished.
I was just curious. I did not volunteer for offering for ladies' retreat because I knew that I would do terrible.
It's okay.
I can't even receive the communion plate correctly. They always come up, I'm like, oh, yeah, thanks. Oh, and then another person walks by and they like barely glance at me. I'm like, oh, no, thanks, I already have mine. And they didn't even ask her. I'm just so awkward. Okay.
It's okay.
Maybe we should go to the next topic.
Okay. So those are some questions to think about. I have opinions on each of them, but I'm not going to give you answers to things that I'm not as convinced of. All right, that's going to wrap up Lord's Supper. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the brief journey through the elements, ordinances. But that's just Lord's Supper. Ordinances, there you go. Ooh. Good job. You scooted away again.
I did?
Yeah, I think I pushed you away with my knee. Sorry about that. I want you close to me.
Aww.
So hopefully you enjoyed the brief journey through the ordinances, baptism and Lord's Supper. It was fun to work through them. They're something that I had been learning about and am still learning about and look forward to learning more about, especially since we'll be doing that during Sunday school hour in our local church. Not just partaking of Lord's Supper, but learning about the ordinances, proper administration of the ordinances, what it actually means, the importance of the ordinances, etc. I'm excited for it. But if we might delve into them again in the future, like 10 years down the road as a refresher, but for now, that'll probably be it. I might reference them, but it's been fun. I don't know where we're going next. I have some ideas. Next week should be a book review of, well, I'll get into the books in a second. What are we reading, Desiree?
Well, we finished The Silver Chair from the Chronicles of Narnia.
Yes. I was like, no, we didn't finish. Oh, yeah, we did.
The Silver Chair. I had vaguely, actually, I hadn't remembered that one at all, except the two characters from the real world that traveled into Narnia.
I made great predictions.
Yeah, Daniel did a good job.
It was fun.
I remember thinking that one was boring as a child.
I can see why you'd think it was boring. There was a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
With not as much going on. Yeah. But it was little stuff that was actually important to the character development. Mm-hmm.
So it was one that like kept me on the edge of my seat.
Mm.
I mean, on the edge of the kitchen sink, because I was always washing dishes when you read it.
Yeah.
But.
Yep, I liked finishing that one. Now we're a couple chapters into The Horse and His Boy. And it wasn't until after we started reading it that I realized the irony of the title.
Because
it's the horse and his boy, not like a boy and his horse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure that one out because I had said the title numerous times. I'd read the title numerous times, rehearsed the order, chatted about them. It's one of my friend's favorite books. But it didn't occur to me till after we were reading it that I was like, wait, it's the horse and his boy. Like, the horse has a boy, which doesn't happen in our world.
Right.
But if you haven't read Narnia, it can happen, apparently, because it's in the title. It didn't spoil anything. But I'm enjoying it so far. It's one that takes place completely within Narnia, as opposed to people popping in and out. Not like it happens all the time. But I'm looking forward to finishing that one. And then we only have two left.
Oh, sad.
Yeah.
Then maybe we can read Wingfeather Saga.
We can read one of those. Not just one of the books, but like there are a couple of...
Oh, the Ember...
Green Ember, Wingfeather, Redwall. There are a couple other ones pointed out. We'll see what happens when we get there. And then next week, there should be a book review coming for What is a Healthy Church. I'm finishing it up and prepping for... It's going to be not just a book review, but like a brief overview of the book. So I'm not going to walk through every page, but I will mention something about each chapter, what it touches on, give kind of an overview. I might set it up to where it's more of a monologue. I might set it up to where Desiree asks me about each chapter. I'm not entirely sure. Or if Desiree has questions as I'm talking, we'll see what ends up happening. I've never really done a verbal book review. I haven't even really written mini book reviews ever. We did that in like 8th grade.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember doing stuff like that in school.
Yeah. So we'll see what that ends up sounding like. Well, maybe it'll be terrible and I'll never do it again, but I'll probably try to keep improving because there are a couple of other books that I'd like to read and either recommend or warn against. Mostly, I'll probably won't do a review on here unless it's actually one worth reading. But there are a couple that I'd like to recommend and explain why and walk through a little bit so that if you don't have time to read through it, maybe this can whet your appetite a little bit for it. Or if you want to pick it up and use it as a reference book, there might be a couple that I would recommend using that way. So we're working our way through. And when we finish Narnia, we'll also do a recap of Narnia. Not a spoiler of anything.
That's going to be hard.
Yeah. But what we think of the series, what we think would be helpful for, maybe some other things as well.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's going to be about it for this week. We enjoyed our Smoky Roe shake and our... fancy bread toast while we were bread toast. Wow. Yeah, it is about time to end it. Our fancy
buttered bread.
Yep. And Desiree's starting to get tired and her words are starting to slur. So
yeah.
All right. Thank you for tuning in to episode 17 of Everyday Ecclesiology. Until next week, keep serving or start serving within your local church. Bye.
Bye.